Did you know what it was? Did you know what motor neuron disease actually meant?
Very little about it. I'd heard it somewhere, I'm not sure where, but didn't realise how much it would affect a person's life and how it would take away your legs and your hands so quickly.
I've been reading up on it because I think a lot of us don't know that much about it, perhaps. And motor neuron disease is a progressive neurological condition that attacks the motor neurons or nerves in the brain and spinal cord. This means messages gradually stop reaching muscles, which leads to weakness and wasting. It can affect how you walk, talk, eat, drink and breathe. However, I'm told that not all symptoms necessarily happen to everyone. It's unlikely they would develop at the same time or in any specific order.
That's right.
Been your experience, Patricia.
Yes.
Tell me how it's affected you right now. You're in a wheelchair.
I'm in a wheelchair. I'm totally dependent on everyone to do everything for me. Can't use my hands, my legs. If I want to move from this wheelchair onto my bed, I have to be hoisted up in the air and put in. The same for my personal care in the bathroom. Everything you did today, I have to have someone do for me. Clean my teeth, brush my hair, everything. Feed me, put the bottle of water up to my mouth, everything.
It's hard for us even to imagine, I think, Patricia. Has this been a gradual then deterioration of all your capabilities since 2011? For instance, when you got the diagnosis confirmed, was it still just your hands that were affected?
Yes. The flinches were going up my arms and into my shoulders. But it was my hands initially. Then after that, my legs started to get weak and they wouldn't support my body. It's just a nightmare.
I presume you read up on it, perhaps, or found out a little bit more about it when you got told. What did you make of that news? What was your reaction, Patricia?
I didn't read up on it that much myself, but Patrick did. I personally thought, if I don't know, it's not going to happen. But obviously, it does. Mm-hmm. I know now what's in future for me, which isn't very nice.
It must be really hard to accept. And we have Patrick, your husband, and your daughter.
It is very hard. You know, I'm sitting here, and
It's okay, Patricia.
It's extremely hard to accept this.
I mean, looking at me. All right, I put on a little bit of weight. Other than sitting in this chair, I'm exactly the same person I was. I'm still me, looking out.
You're obviously very upset, Patricia. I don't know how anybody would cope with what you said is a nightmare, and it sounds like a nightmare, and I'm really sorry. It must be very hard to deal with. I'll get your thoughts on that again maybe sometime, because as you said, it's one that has been raised a lot, and there's lots more we could talk about in business. But I wanted to mention coursing before we run out of time as well. Is it your biggest sporting passion after hurling?
Yeah, are the text messages finished now after this? Well, it is for the winter anyway, John. Yeah, you just like look at coursing was kind of an unconditional love in our house as well. Like, I mean, hurling was number one, and then in the winter when you got up on a Saturday morning, a Sunday morning, you were out netting hares, and it was just fantastic sport, fitness, everything, and the thrill of, you know, catching a hare, and he'd be brought back to the preserves, and he'd run in our course of meeting, and we'd let him back to the preserves. And you know, I think coursing people care more about hares than their dogs, to be honest with you.
That's interesting, because I will say from the book, if you don't know a lot about coursing, you certainly learn about the passion for those involved by reading your book, including obviously your great beginner's luck as well with Murphy's Gang.
Yeah.
So what do you say when people say it's cruel or they don't understand coursing?
I'd say come and see it, you know, first and foremost, because like every sport, like cycling, like athletics, like rugby, like everything, there's been the odd bad case that we wouldn't be too proud of in the game, but 99.9% of the coursing is run superbly. The dogs are muzzled, the hares are springers, otherwise they're not let up on the field, and there's never hardly a hare touched now. And so it's just, I love the game, and we had great luck as well with the Murtys, and you know, thanks to George Gallery and thanks to Gerry Holian for looking after, rearing and training the dogs for us. Right. They were massive men.
What about the future? A lot of people asking about that. You're 44 now.
45.
Sorry, 45. Excuse me. Well, I was being kind to you there, although I heard your mother was giving out about your hairline as well. But
Yeah. She says, it wasn't awful about his hair, she said to Eilish yesterday.
Well, you're not looking too bad for it anyway.
Oh, that's right.
I heard you mention to Cill O'Connor last week that Roy Keane is, well, writing his second half. You'll have another book, will you, or more adventures. There'll be more hurling management for you, will there, Anthony?
Well, I'd like to think I'm about halfway through, and that's 45, John, but Niall Gilligan would say that's wishful thinking, I'd say, on my part. So, look, who knows? Who knows who'll be here in the morning? Who knows who'll be here next week? So, I'm the kind that I live it for the day nearly, and I enjoy it, and I love life, and look, we never died of winter yet, and who knows where that'll bring us.
Have you any intention of going for the Dáil? A number of listeners are asking me. Would you run for politics? You admit to being a Fianna Fáil man at heart in the book.
Yeah, well, again, that was a bit like coursing. You had no choice with Michael Daly in the house. You were told up Dev every night before you went to bed. But look, I probably am a Fianna Fáiler, but you know, I've seen the way this country has gone over the last 15 years, and maybe being a victim of that in another way, you know, economically, and it's not been run well
for
a long time.
Have you been asked to run for politics?
I have, yeah. I've been approached, certainly, anyway. Whether you've been asked or not, you've been approached.
Right.
And I wouldn't never rule it out.
In your book, In Conduct Unbecoming, well, that's a phrase in how you referred to the behaviour of the former Taoiseach and Fianna Fáil leader Charlie Haughey, or rather how
no,
he...
No,
sorry,
no,
it's rather
the
how
other
he...
Way around.
Actually, do you know where I'm getting that from? Because I think there was a little confusion in the Charlie television programme.
Yes,
did they suggest that Des O'Malley accused Charlie Haughey of conduct unbecoming when in fact it was the other way around?
It was the other way around, yes. He accused me of that and found me guilty of it. He was... had a sort of chief prosecutor at the National Executive Meeting of Fianna Fáil, and as well as being chief prosecutor, he was the chief judge, because he presided over the National Executive.
You split from the party, you formed the PDs, you later negotiated a coalition government with Charlie Haughey. How do you regard that style of government and what you achieved together, maybe despite your differences?
Well, we weren't terribly happy about having to do that, but that was the result of the election that was held in 1989. And if anyone is to blame for it, if you like, it's the Irish people, because the mathematics of the result of the election was that if we didn't form that coalition, at that time, there would have to be another general election straight away, and the people wouldn't thank you for that. And I think that our party could well have been wiped out, because it would have been pointed out to us that we could have formed a government and that we didn't. So we had to grin and bear it and go ahead with it.
Right.
But it wasn't... it wasn't an unsuccessful government, let's put it that way. There was a lot of good achieved by it. And it was one of the most successful governments that the PDs were involved in, because after that, the difficulties, in a sense, became even greater.
Did you watch the television programme on Charlie?
I did, indeed.
What
yes.
did you think?
Well, I thought a portrayal of the atmosphere of the time and the fear and the intimidation and everything that went on and the corruption, I thought it was pretty accurate in that generalised way. Now, there's a lot of individual incidents in it that are dramatised, if you like, and it isn't history. It was primarily drama based on history or based on fact, but you wouldn't learn history from it, but at the same time, if you were a student, you would get a pretty accurate feeling of what the atmosphere was like at the time.
How did you feel about the way you were portrayed?
Oh, well, I had no objection to it. I mean,
It must be a strange feeling seeing somebody playing your life.
It is a bit strange, yes, it is. But some of the things I was portrayed as doing didn't happen, like me attacking various deputies with a sword.
You were seen breaking up fights with a sword, yeah, in the programme, yeah. Wasn't that it? That never happened.
That didn't happen, no.
When you spoke to Patrick Barry, did you ask him why he abused 11 young girls?
Is this a judgment on me, or is this a caring for the broken women? Why am I in the dock?
I said you're not in the dock.
Have you talked to the other people who give references in Kilkee?
I haven't, Canon Hannah.
Why not, sir?
I haven't, but with respect, you're seen as a pillar of the community, as a local clergyman. You were asked specifically because of your profession, I would say, and your vocation to clerical life through the Church of Ireland. I understand the Church of Ireland is questioning you too on why you did this.
Indeed,
so,
they did.
Are they putting you in the dock as well?
They certainly put me under the light of judgment, and we
did they ask you, did you meet Patrick Barry, and did they ask you what you said to him, and did they ask you, did you ask him why he abused 11 young girls, or what he had to say about it?
More or less, yeah.
What did you say?
I said I sat with the man and his sisters and let him talk.
Did he ever own up to it?
No, he didn't.
Did he continue to deny it?
He did indeed, and he talked the language of trust in God. What can I say?
And you still decided... Do you believe him, or do you believe the court?
I sit under the judgment, wisdom of the court. I have said that.
So you believe that he...
I was looking at an 81-year-old man in denial. That's an extremely difficult position as a pastor to be in, and I wouldn't be the first.
I don't envy your position. It sounds like a horrible position, but you said yourself you had reluctance in sending this letter or in saying all of these good things about Patrick Barry. So you decided you would send it, though.
Yeah, I had a reluctance to do the wrong thing, but sometimes clergy priests have to stand in dangerous, difficult positions, and I did was round off the picture of the man, and the results are even worse than I thought, but still.
What did the Church of Ireland say to you now, or is it just a matter of asking you why you did it or telling you not to do something like this again?
From the very top, they asked me for my motives. They quite understand where I was standing. They might not necessarily share my decision making, but I wasn't condemned. And we recognize that sometimes the exploitation by the media and the press and these things are far greater than the actual thing itself.
Well, with respect, I don't think this is about the media or the press. I do think it's about 11 women who told how their childhoods were robbed in court. And they're disturbed at your actions, and they're disturbed
which is actually where I was.
Yeah, Pádraig De Barra, you said, was the last person you would have thought that would have been involved in any act of hurt or offend a child. I don't know if it's true. It's your opinion. And you talked about him as a spiritual man and a pillar of the community himself. Can you see how that would be hurtful to his victims?
To hear that at first may be hurtful to victims, and I would hate that would be the case. But can't you understand? I can't tell anything other than the truth. I know hundreds of people in this island who have holidayed in Kilkee who would say the same thing as me about the courteous and enthusiastic man of local history and church buildings and church music, etc. They hadn't got a clue that 20-something, 5 years ago, that Pat, in a position of control in his classroom, was another person.
But if they found out and they accepted the word of the court that indeed he was a paedophile, who preyed like a vicious wolf, we were told, on young girls and robbed them of their childhood innocence, they probably would have said, I'm not going to stand up for him in court.
Those were very late headlines, really.
They weren't headlines, they were the words given by victims, women who were abused, sexually assaulted by their former school principal.
John, it's like everything else, it's keeping things in proportion.
Now, you have a companion with you too, because tell us about your guide dog, Uz.
This is Uz, down to my left here. He's from Guide Dogs Ireland. He's a highly trained and skilled guide dog, and I have him for 2 years. Very lucky to have him. It makes life a heck of a lot easier, you know.
He's a lovely looking companion too. He's a Golden Labrador?
He's a Labrador Retriever cross, and they're kind of bred specifically. And that, as far as I'm aware, that's the kind of breed, the cross, that works best for them.
And do you know where the name Uz comes from, or did you pick that?
No, that's an interesting question, John. It's strange, a little bit like the Hurricanes. When a litter is born, it's just assigned to a letter of the alphabet. In Uz's case, it was U. So there were four pups in his litter. They were all given the name U. There was Uz, and there was Yuri, and there was something else. And people turn around and go, Uz, would you not kind of call him something else, something more regular? And I generally reply, well, I would, but he wouldn't answer to that name. I mean, he was christened Uz, if you like. So look, I got him when he was two, and he came with that name. So it works well for us, you know.
We'll respect that. So, and if you and Uz want to come along, we'll go for a walk up the town. So,
okay, Uz.
Now, I'll just grab a hold of his harness here.
Oh, he's okay, a Uz. Fabulous dog, I must say. He's lovely.
Brilliant. Okay, forward, Uz.
Now.
Okay. Good boy. Straight on. Good boy. Ooh, you make me live.
He leads you around, and you're very much a team if you're walking around Ennis.
Absolutely, and he's great. Obviously, he has two main functions. He's a safety officer from one point of view. He stops me walking into lampposts and dustbins, sandwich boards, maybe slipping off the side of the footpath, all that kind of thing. And also, he's like a sat-nav, so he's responsible for the directions. He probably will anticipate at this stage where we're going, and you'll probably see in a minute he would be trained to find a pedestrian crossing. It's difficult for me to know exactly where it is, so when we turn the corner here in a moment, Uz should actually find the pedestrian crossing for us, you know.
Okay, we're heading up Francis Street. This is a route he'd be used to, so is it?
It is. This would be the standard route up the town. Okay, Uz, fine, right. There'll be a pedestrian crossing here somewhere, and he should find it for us. Ah, there we are. That's brilliant.
Yeah. The traffic is pretty good.
Yep. Do you find people are good at the pedestrian crossings around Ennis?
People are fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I couldn't speak more highly of them. They're absolutely great. I wouldn't be aware, John, who's looking at me or who can see me, but people can actually be quite protective and say, oh, Porrick, were you looking for the car park? You've just passed it. You know? No, people are great. They really are, you know.
Now, you said you have Uz for 2 years, Porrick.
2 years, yeah.
Was that when you lost your sight, or can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I lost my sight in 2012. Just one of those things. They did their best to retrieve it for me, but I kind of knew early enough doors it was going to be a very tall order, even though I had a fantastic, you might have noticed there was a manhole cover. He doesn't like manhole covers. So to get back to the surgery, yeah, they spent about 6 months getting it back. Then I spent about 6 months in rehab when I knew I was consigned to being blind.
Well, what happened, Porrick? Why did this happen?
It was just a medical thing. It was retinal detachment. In most cases, it's possible to reattach retinas with a good result. In my case, I just got unlucky. There were hemorrhages and various complications, and they did, as I say, they did everything they could, but it just didn't work in the end, you know.
That must have been very difficult for you, Porrick.
Well, it is, you know, I mean, there's an emotional side to it, John, and there's also a kind of a practical side. There isn't much utility value in sitting around, you know, feeling sorry for yourself. I've a wife, a family, mortgage, kids. So there was a lot to get on with as well, you know. So it was great. Like, there was a space there of uncertainty. And the more I had to learn, the busier it kept me going. And you do adapt, you know.
When did the guide dog idea come about, or how was that suggested to you? Do you still get recognised on the street? Well, I'm sure people would recognise you still. And
I do, actually, surprisingly. Yeah, I would have thought at this stage, no. But it's mainly young people, because they remember you from when they were children. So if they remember you from when they were 6, 7, 8, they're going to remember you when they're 28. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? That sort of thing. But I mean, people are, you know, invariably, I have to say, I very, very rarely found anybody to be other than pleasant.
Okay.
And look at your nose. They're not throwing stones at you. What the hell?
What do they say? Any news, Anne?
I would have to say that phrase has
that's what I always
has
say,
resonated
yes.
in my ears.
I don't
ears.
Even find it funny anymore, but people
no,
do.
I know it is, and no, it's not so much. I'm fine with the phrase. You know, it's the complete conviction of the person that they've said something really funny that you've never heard before. Oh God! But hey, look, you know, they could be calling you worse.
Exactly.